Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
True or false? Walmart has eye care. True. Stop by Walmart to save and browse top designer frames right where you already shop. And they accept most insurance. Welcome to Easy Eye Care. Welcome to your Walmart.
College baseball fans, it's time for the D1 Baseball Podcast with Mike Rooney, Aaron Fitt, and Kendall Rogers. Let's win every podcast. Now, here's the pride of the Newtown Edgemont Little League, Coach Rooney.
Hello and welcome to an emergency episode of the D1 Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney. Tonight's episode brought to us by our good friends at S2 Cognition. S2 Cognition, it's about swing decisions. It's about getting assessments. We've said it many times. Exit velo doesn't matter if you swing and miss. Strength and speed don't matter if you swing at the balls and take the strikes, as Ted Williams would say. So S2 Cognition will allow you to, first of all, assess how good am I at swing decisions? And then how do I get better at it? This incredible stuff that these guys have going, I encourage you go to their website and inquire about getting an assessment for your son, for your daughter, for yourself, and just kind of take your game to the next level. So again, really appreciate our partnership with S2. For this emergency pod, I've got the great Kendall J. Rogers. I've got Coach Healy, Joe Healy. And boys, we're taping this on Sunday evening. So we're going to kind of just, kind of recap the conference realignment chaos and then maybe offer some ideas and some opinions on this stuff. First of all, happy Sunday. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. I'm glad we recorded this on Sunday because who knows what tomorrow is going to bring from a realignment standpoint.
Yeah, right. Like I think that's one of the lessons in all this is just buckle up. We ain't done. Maybe never to be done again. So
I'll always like what Ross Dellinger said. He's at SI now, is at Yahoo Sports, but he always says believe nothing but consider everything. Just because you just have no idea what to expect in this whole deal. But it is interesting times.
I think I sent you guys my favorite Notre Dame football writer is Pete Sampson. He's their beat guy for The Athletic.
Yeah.
And he had a great opening paragraph the first day of Notre Dame's football camp. He says, wait, didn't preseason camp start? Then why are we talking about apparel contracts, announcing teams and conference realignment in August? Oh, right. Because college football is a sport where no one is in charge. Most of the time, that's a hilarious feature. Right now, it feels like more like a maddening bug. And I think that encapsulates my thoughts. No one is in charge. God bless us all.
That's exactly right. This is not a college football podcast, but the three of us are probably D1 baseball's foremost college football fans, frankly. I don't know that for fact, but the three of us talk college football a decent amount. And I agree with Pete. For a long time, college football being deregulated was fun because that's how you got chaos and weird stuff. And now it's just now that college football is big business, and it's been big business for a long time, but now that we've gotten to this stage of the big business part of it, it is a bug now because now it's, turned us kind of upside down. And from the college baseball perspective, and baseball is not alone, by the way, softball, swim and dive, tennis, you name it. Those sports are all now just kind of caught up in it. And that's, I guess, what we're going to talk about today, because it's now we just need to kind of pick up the pieces and figure out what's next.
Yep.
Yeah. The overall thought here for me is really kind of both positive and negative. I think it's more negative than positive, but the negatives is that you're going to lose a lot of these rivalries in some of these different sports, a lot of these, close games. What I mean by that is travel and things like that. I think the positive here is I think as you look at college baseball, you look around the country at more and more schools putting money into college baseball. This whole situation, it's about football, but ultimately what is it about? It's about money. And as long as the Big Ten is, going to increase their, payout, their payouts to what, $60 million in the next few years per team, although Oregon and Washington have to wait till 2030 to get that full payout. But as long as, you know, the Big Ten's paying out 60 plus million, the SEC's, you know, paying out 60 to 70 million, the ACC, if they hold things together, probably are restructuring their deal. The Big 12's new deal is obviously going to be very good. You know, Brett Yormark's done a really nice job as a commissioner. So what I'm trying to say is schools have more money to spend because of these television deals. That really and truly only helps college baseball, because it's always looked as that sport by at least some schools. I'm looking at you, the Big Ten, that, oh, well, we don't really have the money. Well, if you're making 60 plus million per school, you're adding schools that are historically pretty decent in baseball. Like, your excuse for not putting more money into baseball, like, they're not very valid anymore. So I think in the long run, this will end up being a good thing for baseball. But I really and truly do feel like, I don't think it's going to happen right now because of the television deals, but we can talk about this later. But I truly believe that the end game for college baseball and anything but football and basketball needs to be joining kind of regional conferences in those secondary sports, as opposed to just getting lumped in with football all the time.
It's a perfect segue, KR. And go ahead, Joe. Go.
I was just going to say I agree, and that's part of what I see is maybe the biggest negative of this from a baseball standpoint. In the big picture, is that things have gotten wonky enough now that, let's say tomorrow they just snap their fingers and said, all right, football's doing its own thing. Men's and women's basketball are doing their own thing. Everybody else, fend for yourselves. Well, how long would that take? A decade to get that sorted? Like, that's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
Like, the West Coast isn't going to be like, all right, everybody, places, back to where you were.
Yeah.
No, it is still going to be a business, even if it's not going to be the big business, right? So everybody's going to be looking out for their own interests. And so that we just can't snap our fingers and make that happen. And so are we looking at that future in 2030, 2035, 2040? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, we're going to be kind of gummed up for a while. And that's, to me, that's the most negative part of this.
Yeah, and there's two more thoughts here from my standpoint, and I feel like I'm not helping our segue here, but you know, the one conference I do feel like has a window of opportunity here a little bit is the league that we've all kind of felt like, and they were better last year, but we all kind of felt like they've kind of gone by the wayside a little bit. This is a moment that the Big West, I think, can make a move in baseball, because if you're the Big West and you've got, you know, Cal Poly, you've got Fullerton, you've got, you know, Long Beach State, UC Irvine, schools like UC Santa Barbara. If you're those schools, you can go out on the recruiting trail and sell to a family that, hey, your kid will be playing college, the most of their college baseball inside the state of California. If you're going to USC, UCLA, and granted, those two schools are a little bit different animals because they have such a huge national brand. But if you look at USC and UCLA, and the other in Oregon and Washington, which they recruit California heavily as well, you know, your pitch against them is very easy. Like, I mean, do you want to go watch your kid play in California, or do you want to watch them go to UCLA and play, you know, Rutgers and Purdue? You know, you make the choice. And I do think, you know, for coaches that are really good recruiters, I think there's a window of opportunity for the Big West. I think the other thing for me is literally in the last 5 minutes as we've been talking, you know, Jason Shear, who's an Arizona insider, you know, reporting that Oregon State and San Diego State are now talking to Big 12. So, I mean, I guess the answer, or I guess the ultimate thought here is, like, I don't think we're even close to being done here. And Oregon State, by the way, is the one school that I really do hope lands somewhere pretty good, like the Big 12, because it would be very disappointing for the baseball program to be stuck in a really bad conference.
Yeah, so hold that thought, boys. So let's start to unpack the conferences, and we'll do the Pac-4 third. So let's start with the Big 12. So the Big 12 is now an 18-team conference. If you think about it, BYU, mm-hmm. Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF are coming this year. Texas and Oklahoma, one more year, right? And then next year, when Texas and Oklahoma leave, that's when Utah, Arizona, and Arizona State come in. So let's focus on the 2025 season when that stuff has played itself out and rinsed itself out. So the Big 12 will be an 18-team league with two schools that don't sponsor baseball, Iowa State and Colorado. So you're talking about a 16-team league. So the question, boys, is, hey, and Ray Anderson, the athletic director at Arizona State, you know, the one thing about these Big 12 schools, they don't have a ton of money. And he said already they've been in the Big 12 for 5 seconds. And Ray Anderson said, hey, we've already started discussions about divisions for Olympic sports. So that's crystal clear to me like that Arizona, like they have no interest
you
in
gotta
playing.
Do that.
Yeah, got to do it. So here's the question, boys. Do you go east-west? Do you go north-south? Let me just throw an east-west, for instance, at you for baseball. We're only talking baseball now. So could the West be Arizona State, Arizona, BYU, Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, Utah, Houston, and then the East? And again, this is messy, right? Like I'm throwing a dart right now. The East is West Virginia, Cincinnati, Central Florida, Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State. I mean, I get it. That's not really West and East. I don't even know what that is. It's just like, hey, you six go over here. I don't know. What do you guys think? What do they do for baseball?
You can go ahead, Joe, if you'd like.
I think it makes sense to me to go. This is my snapshot. I've not kind of done back of the napkin like you just did there, Runes. I've not really done that yet, but it makes sense to me, baseball being a sport that's so affected by weather. Mm-hmm. It makes some sense to me to split them more east-west than north-south, because I think if you end up with a north division, you kind of end up with, I mean, no disrespect, but it's the reality. You end up with Cincinnati and West Virginia and K-State and Kansas. And, you know, and while somebody's going to love that, like West Virginia would probably love that arrangement, right? I mean, they'd mm-hmm. be the big dog in that group. And of course, you'd have to add a couple more teams to that to make it balanced. But I just think it makes it a little more, it feels like it makes it a little more balanced if you have some East and West, because then you maybe can sprinkle some of the more northern teams around, because K-State and Kansas can go either way, right? Like they're smack in the middle of it and can really go mm-hmm. either way. The Texas teams could maybe go either way depending on where they are. Like theoretically, Houston and Tech obviously are on different parts of the state. So anyway, long story short, just feels a little more potentially balanced with an East West versus North South.
Go ahead, Kendall.
Yeah, I'm with Joe. I think East West makes a lot more sense here. And can I just say this? I think the Big 12, strictly baseball, I think the Big 12 is by far the biggest winner here. You know, when you lose mm-hmm. Texas and Oklahoma, especially University of Texas, that's a little bit of a gut punch from a baseball standpoint. I think when you look at the Big 12 right now with Texas Tech, you know, you got Arizona State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Arizona. I mean, that's a really good baseball conference. And, yeah. You know, you're looking at the Big 12 now as a league with 8, 9, 10 really solid programs. And then you throw UCF in there who, I mean, let's be honest, they should be a lot better than they are. There's a lot of potential there with Rich Wallace and the Knights. And then, you know, even Cincinnati, that Cincinnati becomes a really difficult job now in this league. But, I mean, if there's somebody that can do it, it's Jordan Bischel.
Yeah, they got a great coach.
He's a fantastic coach. So when you just look at the collection of programs, you look at the collection of coaches, I think the Big 12 is a big winner here. And by the way, I'd be curious to get your take on this, but I actually feel like Arizona State and Arizona are actually pretty good fits with these schools. Like, I kind of feel like when you look at both of those schools, they both have, at least from a baseball standpoint, pretty passionate fan bases. You know, I know people don't historically look at Arizona State as like an SEC type of fan base, but I'll tell you what, I mean, I was there. I think it was the year that ASU was top five with Tracy and the that was the year before the COVID year, whenever they had Michigan. You were with me when they played Michigan at Muni early in the season, and it might have been 2020.
Yeah, it was pandemic. It was right before things. Yeah, because Stephen Hadger was from Michigan,
yes.
And they were coming
exactly.
off of
and
the finals.
I remember being at Muni, and like it was February, and they had like 6,000 people there. So when you look at that fan base, and you look at Arizona, and certainly High Corbett's been packed before, I just think they're a really good fit with the Big 12 in that regard. So I'm kind of excited to see those two schools with the Big 12 schools.
Yeah, I think they've really – the league is improving in baseball, considering that you're losing upside like Texas and Oklahoma. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think about Oklahoma State's facility is top-notch. Arizona – to your point, Kendall, Arizona State, when they hosted Arizona this year, I mean, they had 17,000 fans there that weekend. And it's literally a big league spring training park. And the weather is incredible. I mean, it's – that, you know, this there's a lot to like there. And I'll tell you, the one thing I would say for the Big 12, and this is advice I'm really giving to the Big 10, but the more I think about it, I think it applies to the Big 12. Get creative with your scheduling, because let's be honest, you don't have a regular season champion in baseball anymore. You don't, right? Like, there's no such thing as a regular season champion with 16 teams. You might have division champions or whatever you want to conjure up, but what I might think about doing, and this will segue us into the Big Ten, is and I'll come back to this thought, is, hey, do 8 conference weekends that are reasonable opponents that you're not crisscrossing the country, and maybe do some potluck weekends. Like go to some spring training places and play. Like I think about the events that our peak event guys are putting on. Why can't you do that in your conference? 4 teams go to one really cool facility, play 3 different teams. Hey, even do a regional format as like a regional primer.
Yeah.
Like do something fun and creative as opposed to, I don't know, like Cincinnati traveling to BYU to just force a conference series for the dumbest reasons of all time.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I and Joe might actually remember this too a little bit, but I remember when I was a kid, I think it was 93, 94. It was one of those years, and the SWC, the Southwest Conference, had a first pitch tournament. So they always started the year with like an 18 tournament of all the teams in the SWC. That's the way they started the year. And they would go, you know, 4-4. And I still remember they opened Cougar Field at U of H on a Saturday night with A&M in Texas. And, I mean, they had like 5,000 people, which 5,000 people in Cougar Field is massive. But they had 5,000 people there. And, I mean, it was split right down the middle. It created a really cool atmosphere to start the college baseball season. So I love that idea.
It probably didn't help University of Houston fans' kind of inferiority complex with A&M in Texas that the big game to open up Cougar Field was A&M in Texas.
Well, it's always open up their it's own always field. Like, you know, no offense to my boy Walt Greenberg and Rice fans, but it always cracks me up when you look at like Reckling Park and their media guide, like largest crowds ever. And like the top 2 or A&M versus Texas in that regional that one year.
Oh, that was nice.
Back-to-back days.
You know, there is a little bit of precedent for a scheduling situation like that. So we all remember the Big Ten in 21, right? Which I think is the Big Ten I've long griped about. With a conference that big, you should be playing more than 8 conference weekends. And to mitigate the weather, why don't you just recreate what you did in 2021? Anyway, setting that aside, had it not been for the pandemic, the American was going to do that. Yeah. You know, I wrote something back pre-COVID 2020. I had caught wind of the fact that the American was going to do that format starting in 2021. Because if you remember, in that iteration of the American, they had this wonky little thing where every team had a team they played twice, but it was just one team. And so really, it was kind of, you know, some team was going to draw East Carolina twice, shout out Cincinnati, and then some team was going to draw Memphis twice. And that's, you know, that can make a big difference in the conference standings when you're only playing 24 conference games. The fact that you got 3 extra against the best team in the league or the worst team in the league makes a big difference. And so to mitigate that, they were going to do some sort of like send 4 teams here, send 4 teams there, and do some sort of, you know, pod play or regional format or whatever. And you know, COVID cost us that, because after that happened, they kind of had to rethink a lot of things. But regardless, so it's not that. I like the idea. Actually, I love the idea. And it's not that outlandish, frankly.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I like the idea of some of these leagues just saying, hey, we're going to take 1 weekend and we're going to play regionals just to give our teams an edge for the postseason. Now, I know it could get crazy with pitching, but it's the regular season. At this point, all bets are off. So let's go to the Big Ten, because this really applies to the Big Ten. So the Big Ten now is a league with 18 teams, but Wisconsin sucks. So they don't have baseball. So, sorry, Barry Alvarez.
Don't let Patrick Ebert hear you say that.
Well, the state of Wisconsin is great. The athletic department of Wisconsin is who I've got ire with. So this is going to be, let's call it what it is. It's going to be 13 teams in the Big Ten plus 4 West Coast teams that are weirdly attached. So, you know, and by the way, boys, we don't have to answer this today, but what in the Hades are these people going to do about conference tournaments? Like, Anybody got a format in their back pocket for a 17-team conference tournament?
But I think the Big Ten ought to go to split tournament. Remember the SWC, the SEC at one point had split tournaments
for, you know, the conference tournament.
Yeah, they at one point they had an SEC West and SEC East tournament.
Interesting, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a long time ago.
The problem for the Big Ten though is obviously like they don't have an East and a West. Like I know people are trying to, like the football people are saying, oh, you could just do a West and an East. That's not going to work in baseball. It's not going to work in the Olympic sports. So, and here's the other problem for the Big Ten. You have got to get to 30 conference games. You are hurting your league being at 24 conference games. So again, like my thought on the Big Ten is exactly what we just talked about. And I hate this for the 4 West Coast teams, but they almost have to play each other twice. Like I think let's just take Oregon. I think they've got to play home and away with Washington, home and away with SC, home and away with UCLA, then play two weekends with these teams that are 2,000 miles away, and then maybe you get two hybrid weekends like the peak events tournament or that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, when you play teams six times, it gets really chippy in games 4.5, 5, and 6. Like if sportsmanship can not be awesome at the end of those little deals, but I don't know, unless you guys have other ideas, I don't see how else you do it.
Shout out to the old six pack, right, Runes?
Oh gosh. Yeah. That call the cops before the game.
I mean, it feels like there's a couple of ways out here from a baseball standpoint. One is that we talked about this on WhatsApp, and I agree that it's not the likeliest scenario, but they could get bailed out if they end up having to take Cal and Stanford, mm-hmm. right? Because let's face it, the academic profile of those schools fits exactly what the Big Ten wants, right? They still want that type of academic profile, and God bless them. Like, I'm not saying that as a bad thing. Like, great, you know, ultimately these are colleges. But barring that, because that would help even it out, right? Then you'd have six of them, and at least, okay, now you've got at least half of a conference schedule just on the West Coast. But I think given the challenge, I think there's an opportunity here for the Big Ten because of the challenges of, hey, look, nobody else in the conference except these West Coast teams can play on March at home on March 10th, not comfortably anyway, right? You might get lucky and get the 60 degree day in Indiana or Illinois, but not likely. Right. So, you know, maybe the answer is, and this could be a little bit of an olive branch to those West Coast teams that have a lot of understandable concerns about, hey, you're telling me we're going to throw everybody on a plane and send them to West Lafayette or wherever for the weekend. Maybe that's a little bit of an olive branch to say, look, okay, you're going to play each other on the West Coast. And then the first 2 weeks of conference play, we're going to send them all out there. Basically, yeah. Everybody else is going to you. And I don't know how they'd set that up, but you could have four locations. I know that Washington and Oregon aren't that comfortable in early March either, but you know, less chance of snow at least. Mm-hmm. But just send everybody out west for the first 2 weeks of conference play, you know, to give you those 10 conference weeks. And then, okay, once you get to mid-March, late March, then you can start filtering everybody back to the Midwest and what have you. That's super back of the napkin in pencil type of idea, but I think it can, I don't want to say solve two problems, but it can both help the scheduling and also be a little bit of, like I said, an olive branch to those West Coast teams of like, hey, we know this is hard. We know you didn't sign up for this. Here's how we're going to mitigate a little bit of that for you.
Yeah. Just backload the road schedule. I have two thoughts. Number one, USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington better be really, really glad the SEC doesn't want somebody like Stanford. I mean, could you imagine if you're Stanford and let's say the SEC wants to add you, you go to the SEC, and can you imagine like a recruit trying to pick between playing at Stanford and the SEC or something like that, or USC and UCLA in the Big Ten? Mm. They talk about just an outrageous recruiting advantage. So my first thought is they better be glad there wasn't a West Coast school that the SEC tried to poach. Number two, I think the biggest storyline for me with the Big Ten is, will all these changes finally change just the overall just theme and approach from the Big Ten from a baseball standpoint? You know, Tony Petitti, the new commissioner, has a baseball background, obviously a former MLB guy. You know, that's certainly a feather in the cap from a college baseball standpoint. And then, you know, USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon, the thing about those schools is they're not, you know, all of them from an administrative standpoint aren't necessarily just, you know, rabid college baseball people. But what they are, they're all schools with coaches for the most part who are ultra passionate. Like they will go in a coach's annual coaches meeting and they won't just like lay over and just take, you know, note at everything as a legitimate answer. Like they'll want robust discussions, whether it's John Savage, Mark Wazakowski, which by the way, he was at Purdue before, so he kind of knows the inner workings of the Big Ten.
Welcome home.
And then JK. JK is certainly a very honest guy too. So I think adding those schools and frankly adding those personalities as coaches will help the Big Ten. The question is how much will it help the Big Ten from a baseball standpoint? That'll be the million-dollar question. The other thing is too, is does this finally give the Big Ten a window here to try to implement the Eric Backage plan of moving the season back, you know, 3 or 4 weeks and extending the College World Series into July 4th weekend? Will it give that some newfound momentum?
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I think a 4 weeks is kind of a dead idea at this point. Maybe 2 weeks is more passionate.
Yeah.
But I think the Southern California schools aren't even in favor of it. Hey, everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
For the next 15 seconds, picture yourself in a small town. Historic buildings with galleries, restaurants, micro distilleries. Forested ridgelines on the horizon. Wide alpine meadows. Evergreen forests threaded with trails. Friendly locals eager to guide you. And if you're not quite ready to leave this fantasy, chances are you're our kind. And you should check out visitparkcity.com right away. Park City, Utah, for the mountain kind.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
True or false? Walmart has eye care. True. Stop by Walmart to save and browse top designer frames right where you already shop. And they accept most insurance. Welcome to Easy Eye Care. Welcome to your Walmart.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I think the ultimate question, Kendall, when you were laying that out, what I was thinking is, do these four schools make the Big Ten better in baseball, or does the Big Ten make these four schools not as good in baseball? Or is there a rising, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, does it hurt their profile, those types of things? Or can a rising tide lift all boats? I think that's going to be interesting. But I do, hey, like as we sit here today, if you took these four programs as they're currently constituted, they're four of the better programs in the Big Ten. Like you didn't add four bottom feeders. You added four teams that would legitimately compete for your title. So I think that as we sit here today, this is very positive for Big Ten baseball. Now, where it goes from here, I don't know. Like that's going to be tricky.
Yeah, I mean, the question becomes, do these four West Coast teams become Nebraska, who was a perennial power in the Big 12, went to the Big 10? And granted, they have been bad in the Big 10, but they're not the national program that they were for a decade in the Big 12. And the other question would be, and really my other thought would be, I think what's going to end up happening is I think you're going to see even more and more California kids in specific go to the SEC. I think the pitch from these SEC schools, considering they've already had success getting to California, getting some of these premier players, I think they have a more robust argument than they've ever had against these schools.
Yeah, hard to disagree with that. Go ahead, Joe.
The Nebraska example is an interesting one, but it's hard for me to suss that out because I do agree with the general sentiment that since Nebraska has been in the Big Ten, they've not been quite as relevant nationally. But I'm not sure how to suss out how much of that was a conference move and the fact that their move to the Big Ten also kind of coincided with being a couple of years after all of the Dave Van Horn washed out of the program, right?
Yeah.
So like that's kind of a hard one.
He's a decent coach.
He knows what he's doing, as it turns out. So yeah, so that's a tough one. I agree that it's a good comparison. I think if we want to read some tea leaves, I think that's a good place to look. It's just that the timing of that is kind of tough, though, given that the best coach and most successful coach in program history had left several years earlier. And by that point, you know, his players were gone. They had to make another coaching change, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that
well,
part,
not only
that,
that well,
doesn't go ahead. Yeah. You go first, Kendall.
Well, I was just going to say very quickly, and no offense to Nebraska, but like all four of those schools we just mentioned have better recruiting profiles than Nebraska does in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Washington's a great school in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Oregon, I mean, we don't have to really talk about their brand. And then you have USC, UCLA, who every kid, you know, a lot of kids in Southern California grew up wanting to be a Trojan or wanting to be a Bruin. So the recruiting profile is significantly different. So that could be the one difference between maybe Nebraska, the Nebraska example, and those four schools.
Yeah. I think the part of the Nebraska story, and again, it's like chicken and the egg type of thing. Like Nebraska's great teams probably had a very Texas influence, or at least some of it. And then do you lose that when you go to the Big Ten? You know, Oregon and Washington, they always have had good players from California. Does this hurt their ability to recruit those kids? I mean, we won't know, right? Like these are questions that can't be answered except through time. Hey, let's talk about the Pac-4, if you will. This is sad. I mean, Cal, and I read an article tonight, Cal and Stanford lead the nation in producing Olympic athletes, and they're homeless right now. I mean, Oregon State and Washington State are really cool athletic departments that they're, you know, make a lot out of a little. Hey, and let's just focus on baseball. Oregon State has 3 national titles since 2006. That leads the country. Stanford, 3 straight Omahas. That leads the country. Yeah. In 2022, just 1 year ago, Stanford and Oregon State were the number 2 and number 3 national seed in our sport. Like they, like top 3 going into the NCAA tournament. So, you know, like, here's the thing that's scary is I've read reports that say that there were several Big Ten schools that didn't even want Oregon and Washington because they know that the next contract they're going to, you know, Oregon's not going to take a half share in the next contract, which means less for those schools, you know? So now you're going to ask them to take Stanford and Cal, who are going to command even less money. So it gets really complicated, but Kendall, let me start with you. Any thoughts on what happens with Stanford, Cal, Oregon State and Washington State, or what could happen?
I feel pretty confident about Stanford. I think Stanford will find its way somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where at this point. Cal is the one I'm worried about because, I mean, if you look at Cal overall, from a cultural standpoint, like they don't really give a damn about college athletics. I mean, let's be very honest. They've got a lot of, you know, former student-athletes that are Olympians, but by far and wide, like they do not have a very large fan base for a school their size with their kind of profile. So they're number one, they're not a huge like athletic minded school, which is fine. Like you don't have to be. The other thing is I think they lead the country in like athletic debt. It's something like $490 million. The other thing for me is I'm concerned about their baseball program because let's not forget they tried to cut baseball at one point. And if they're in a situation in a league where they're not getting anywhere near as much money as maybe they were even before, maybe they go, hey, we got to start cutting some programs again. And maybe baseball ends up being one of the sacrificial lambs. And so I worry the most about Cal. I mean, Washington State would be in that mold too, just because, I mean, at least Cal has the Bay Area. I mean, if you're Washington State, like if you're thinking of it from a conference, I'm not saying me, but like you're thinking of it from a conference standpoint, like what is their allure? I mean, they're in Eastern Washington. If you're the Big 12, you're not going to go get Wazoo. You're going to go get Gonzaga for basketball only, which they've talked about adding basketball-only members. You're just going to go Gonzaga, and, like, that's all you need to get Eastern Washington. So I think they're in a bad spot. Oregon State, again, is the one school that I really and truly hope lands in a good spot because Oregon State's a unique place, man. Like I've always said, it's one of the few West Coast schools you go to for a big game. And like you feel like you're in the heart of SEC country, like it. And I'm not trying to just compare everything to the SEC, but you know that is the gold standard in terms of atmospheres in college baseball. And Oregon State is as close as you're going to get to that on the West Coast. Either football program's in a really good spot with Jonathan. What's his last name?
Smith.
I forget. Yeah, Jonathan Smith. Like he's done a really nice job there. They just renovated their football stadium. You know, Wayne Tinkle's had some nice teams there over the last few years. And so, I like Oregon State's profile. It's an ultra-passionate fan base. And, you know, there is a sizable alumni base there in that Portland, Seattle area. So I would say in order, I'll probably feel the best about Stanford, Oregon State, Cal, Washington State in that order.
Yeah. Did you drop a Wayne Tinkle on us, KR? Is that the basketball coach?
That's the basketball coach.
Well done. Look at you. Go Beavs.
Plus 5 for knowing Oregon State's basketball coach.
Seriously. You should get a credit on the nonsense tracker next to Omaha.
Wait, I think he's still the coach. He might have gotten fired last year because I don't think they're very good.
He's still the coach, but he's on thin ice. He should be a hero to us all. He got his team to the Elite Eight, got a giant contract extension, and the team has been awful the last 2 years.
No, exactly. I mean, that's why I like corrected myself and said, oh, they were good like a few years ago because I was like pretty sure they were terrible.
All right, I'm on Team Tinkle.
Go ahead, Joe. I talked way too long. Sorry.
You were good.
No, it's You led us to Wayne Tinkle, which is the best thing that could have happened in that scenario. Well, I just, my overarching thing, I agree with just, you're kind of gutted for, from a baseball standpoint, Oregon State most notably. And I'm with Kendall that you feel for Stanford too in a way, but I kind of have a feeling that Stanford will find a home. And also Stanford, look, I mean, we could quibble with some things about Stanford. Shout out to their streaming capabilities in baseball. But look, that university is flush enough that if they decide, hey, we're just going to throw a bunch of money at baseball to allow them to, heck, they could even be an independent. I'm not saying they're going to, but if they have the money to just do that and make it work, right? So, like, I am not that worried about Stanford, but I just do worry about it from the standpoint of look, I made this comparison on Twitter, and I'll make it quickly here, and I can do a better job of it in audio than I can on Twitter, is that, you know, if I'm a fan of an NFL team, I don't really care when the NFL signs a new deal with Fox or CBS or NBC or ESPN or what have you, because it doesn't, especially in a salary cap sport, does not affect really at all my team's ability to compete. But in college athletics, if you're talking about competing for national titles, it is almost entirely based on what conference you're in. I mean, you look at access to the college football playoff, access to the NCAA tournament in basketball, women's basketball, baseball. There's a lot wrapped up in conference affiliation and playing we see how much easier it is to get an at-large bid when you play in a conference where you're going to have the RPI help, whatever it is. And unfortunately, if you're Oregon State, you've done all of the right things. Mm-hmm. You, at least from a baseball standpoint, you have a great facility. You have a lot of fans. You have a great atmosphere. You've won a whole bunch. You've put a bunch of players into Major League Baseball. And because you're not an attractive television market, an attractive program in the sports that matter most, you are left out in the cold. And this is how that kind of stuff happens. We haven't seen anything this extreme. We haven't really seen a conference that's this prominent in baseball die like this. I mean, we've seen the old Big East got dissolved, but it wasn't in baseball what this is, right? So this is kind of uncharted territory. But I think about teams like Conference USA used to be a major conference in baseball, and it's just not anymore, right? It's because they got bled out to the point where now, if you're a good team in Conference USA, you're kind of looking around saying, like, where's our help? Like, you know, we can't, if you're Louisiana Tech, right? Or even the last couple of years with Rice under Wayne Graham, like, they're winning a bunch of games, but the league keeps getting worse and it's not helping them. That's kind of where Oregon State's going to be unless somehow they get bailed out by the Big 12 or someone else. And that's just through no fault of their own. And that sucks, honestly. Mm. And it's just, I mean, these are less conferences and they're more, I think Bomani Jones made the point on Twitter, these are less conferences and more television collectives, you know, and that's just the reality. Like, it's just an old man yells at cloud if you complain about that, because it's just the reality. But for Oregon State today, it sucks 100%.
Well, my question would be for like Stanford. So there have been a little bit of rumblings about them going independent in athletics. The problem I see with that from a baseball standpoint only is if the Big Ten has 18, the SEC has 16, the Big 12 has 14 baseball playing teams, and they're all adding another week of conference games. Let's say they're like the ACC, they're playing 2 weeks, then going into conference. Like, who the hell is Stanford going to play in April? You know, they'll have nobody to play.
I don't know how BYU did it when they, but like Notre Dame is kind of a fake example of this because they've always been in a league for Olympic sports. And they have a big fat football contract to lean on to be independent, and Stanford won't have those luxuries. So I don't know. I mean, this gets really messy, you know, like I think we can't, you know, I don't want to be a doomsdayer, but like, I don't think we can overstate the danger danger's the wrong word, but I think you guys know what I'm saying. Like, Stanford, Oregon State, Washington State, and Cal, for their Olympic sports scheduling purposes, you got a real problem on your hands right now. And Cal's got 30 sports. Like, to your point, Kendall, who are you playing in the middle of April? Who? Like, just a bunch of teams on buys? And now there's four of you that are vying for those teams? Like, I don't know. Like, you got to figure something out.
Well, the thing about it is, it won't be Big 12. It won't be Big 10. It won't be SEC. And it won't be ACC. So your whole schedule is just going to be mid-majors. Well, guess what? You have no shot at getting the postseason if your whole schedule is mid-majors, unless you just roll in all of those, for the most part, in all of those games.
Yep. I mean, in all this, let's wrap with this. The SEC is just in gorgeous position. The only challenge coming down the baseball horizon for the SEC, and air quotes challenge, is that, hey, you're going to have 16 teams. We know how dogged that league is. Like, can you get the selection committee comfortable with admitting 12 and 18 SEC teams into the NCAA tournament on a regular basis? Yes. Like that, maybe I'm wrong, but that feels like the next frontier for the SEC. I don't know, man. That doesn't feel like an easy chore if the selection committee is in fact going to be representative of the country.
Well, I think it's gonna. The Overton window is gonna move on that to where now that all of these conferences are major conferences. I think there's going to be less instances where you're comparing a 12 and 18 SEC team against a 17 and 13
fair. Yeah.
Other major conference club, because everybody's going to get kind of beat up like that because the conferences are getting bigger and unbalanced. And so I think there is going to be a little bit more apples to apples than there is now. No, maybe not. We'll see. But I do think there is going to be a little moving of the expectations there. So I do think we are, I don't know if it's, it's probably not next year, but I don't know if it's 2025 or 26 or whatever, but I think we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah. And thinking too, like, perception can sometimes be reality. And what's really interesting is, you know, the Big Ten is always one of those conferences that really outside of four teams are pretty much like, yeah, they're not getting in. Well, now with these four new West Coast teams, from a recency bias standpoint, do you look at the Big Ten the same way as of like, hey, this is pretty much three or four teams out of this league getting in? Or do you automatically, or as a committee, do you shift your idea of, okay, this league suddenly has become a league that definitely deserves to get five, six, seven bids, you know, type of league? That'll be really interesting to me, because right now it's like four or less and that's it for the Big Ten.
Yeah.
There's like, you know, like Rutgers, for instance, a couple of years ago, granted, their non-conference schedule is horrendous, but I mean, They pretty much had no shot on selection day, even though they had a really, you know, really solid overall record and really solid conference record.
Isn't that amazing? Like, what we're saying out loud, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you guys are saying, but what we're saying out loud is we're entering an era of college baseball where your conference season means less than your non-conference season. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but like those words did not feel good coming out of my mouth.
I think we're nearing a point where it's almost like college baseball will have like conference placeholders. Like, you almost have to, right? I mean,
top in the top 10 in this league. And
yeah. I mean, like unofficially, obviously, like not officially, but like unofficially, you're going to have to look at the Big Ten and go, hey, like if there's six teams in the top, you know, 60 RPI, we're going to put them in. Yep. Kind of deal behind the scenes. I mean, you're almost going to have to with those four teams going to that conference.
The one thing that this is now becoming more global. This is, you know, it's not a real thought. It's just a saying something out loud. But like at some point, the athletic directors outside of the SEC, you know, in theory, are going to look at this and say, okay, Olympic sports, we're not doing this anymore. Like we're just not, you know, like, the Oregon athletic department saying, hey, for Olympic sports, we're not in the Big Ten. This is a joke. Like, what are we doing? You know, like, why are we playing the guys in our backyard six times? And then, you know, so I don't know, like to your point earlier, Joe, like that could take a decade for us to get there. I don't, like, this doesn't even go into play right away. Hey, let's finish with this. Ironically, in spite of it, I'm sure it feels very uncomfortable, but as we sit here in this moment, ACC baseball feels like it's in a really good place. I mean, Florida State, I think, is going to make a quick turnaround. I don't think Louisville is going to stay down. Wake Forest getting a Chase Burns, you know, Wake Forest had another great offseason. You know, it's unfortunate for the ACC that the Florida State, every leader that can put a Florida State pin on is just smashing the conference verbally. Like, that's not ideal. And I do worry about them from an NIL perspective because they compete against the SEC directly for recruits. But I don't know, like I'm maybe optimistic's the wrong word, but ACC baseball is in a pretty dang good place in this moment. Maybe you guys disagree though.
Yeah. I mean, Florida State to me, I mean, I know that there's been a lot of like, just, you know, loud words out of Tallahassee, but like, I kind of feel like if you're the SEC, I mean, the only place they'd be going would be the SEC probably. I mean, I can't imagine that they would go to the Big Ten. although I couldn't imagine, you know, a year ago that UCLA would go to the Big Ten. But, you know, I would think if you're the SEC, you're probably more wanting like North Carolina and Clemson than Florida State. I don't know. That's my feeling. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, I feel like the ACC is in a pretty good spot. I mean, it sounds like that league, for the most part, is pretty stable. You know, you have Bubba Cunningham at UNC kind of coming out and calling out Florida State the other day. It seems like they kind of have a united front, which is nice to see this day and age a little bit.
If you're an SEC school, though, like you're in such pole position. Let's say your annual income from the TV deal for the SEC is $70 million a year, just for a round number. If you're the SEC presidents in schools right now, you're saying to Greg Sankey, hey, those schools are very interesting. Florida State, Clemson, let's just focus on those two. North Carolina, whatever. Very interested. As long as you can guarantee me that I'm never getting less. Like, meaning, I don't bring them in here and then I get less because we have to split it more. So basically you're saying to the TV companies, hey, if we bring in these schools, the very least is you got to be paying $70 million each for them. Like I'm not. So that's where it gets tricky is now you're asking ESPN Fox, like, hey, are Clemson and Florida State worth $70 million each? I don't know. Like,
well, the other thing too, yeah, I mean, the other thing too, and I know you have to be a little bit more careful in this opinion than us, but I mean, the other thing too is like from an ESPN standpoint, like why in the hell would you build up the ACC, build up the ACC network and even think to put yourself in a position to where the league might get rattled a little bit, you know, to have, you know, 2, 3, 4 teams potentially leave the ACC. Like, I just don't see any way ESPN's building up the ACC, then all of a sudden going, okay, we're fine with the league being on shaky ground all of a sudden. Because it's not like that they did that with the Big 12. Let's remember, the only thing the Big 12 had was the Longhorn Network. So I think they were okay with the Big 12 being shaky because they didn't have the same type of setup as they do the ACC. They're not building a network around the whole conference in the Big 12 like they are the ACC. So that's my feeling. I still feel like ESPN and Fox is – pulls a lot of strings in this deal, and I just don't see them letting the ACC go on pretty shaky ground. I might be wrong.
I don't know what their move is, though. Go ahead, Joe. Like, that's the tricky part. What is ESPN's move there? Is it renegotiate the contract, or what do they do?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, I'm out of my depth if I try to start wading into those waters. But I think it's a tricky situation. I think the SEC is in an enviable place because, let's face it, most of these moves get made out of fear. Not out of a position of strength. Now, the SEC poaching Texas and Oklahoma, the SEC did not need to do that. That was a move made out of strength. But the Big 12 is adding these teams because they were afraid if they didn't do that to the Pac-12, it was going to get done to them.
Strength in numbers, yeah.
Right. And the Big 10 is thinking about it less from there. The Big 10 is competing less in their minds with the Big 12 and the Pac-12 as they are with the SEC. And so they're feeling pressure of, hey, we need to, the SEC just added, we need to add. And so that happens that way. And so the SEC is in a little bit of an enviable position of like, yeah, if you guys want to kind of like pick off some parts, that's great. I mean, we feel pretty good about what we have, and nobody's leaving the SEC in this current climate, right? So they don't have to act out of that. What I will say when it comes to the ACC is it does feel more stable, but I think a lot of that's just because Florida State tried to saber rattle a little bit and everyone kind of looked at him with side eye. Like, what are you doing over here? Right. I mean, like, where are you going?
You have no invitations.
Like, yeah. So
I'm leaving, but I have no ride home.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So there's that, but I will say one of the cardinal sins of the Pac-12 among many, and this is not the podcast to dive into that. There are plenty of reporters doing good work that are a lot more sourced in this than the three of us. But one of their cardinal sins was they just kind of kept sitting on their hands, yeah. Right? Not just with the media deal. Oh, that was a big part of it. This media deal, it was always 2 weeks away, right? It was like, we're close and it never happened. But also they had a chance, what, 12 years ago to take on Texas and Oklahoma and maybe a couple of others. And they decided to pass. Because they felt like they were in a position of strength, and they were turned out to be wrong about that ultimately. And so there is a penalty for moving slowly on this stuff. So, you know, if you're the ACC, that's the only thing is that I think John Wilner, or John Canzano, one of those West Coast Johns, made this point of, maybe it was Stuart Mandel. Heck, I've read a lot of realignment stuff, as you guys all have recently, but made the point of realignment tends to happen when nothing else is happening. These last few moves have come out of nowhere. Texas and Oklahoma, UCLA, USC, and these moves we saw last week. We saw none of them coming. Maybe in the distance. I think we all saw instability in the Pac-12, right? But we didn't see, hey, last Monday, we did not say, hey, 4 days from now, the Pac-12 is going to be essentially dead. We never would have thought that. So that's the only thing, is that in this climate, I don't think you can really ever be comfortable unless right now you're the Big Ten or the SEC, frankly.
Yeah,
you know, the ACC is the lead that I think out of all these different conferences that it'd be actually kind of intriguing if they picked up, again, geographically, it's outrageously stupid. But I mean, like Cal and Stanford might actually fit in okay with the academic schools in the ACC. Like, you know, you could have a situation where maybe you take on Stanford and maybe go pluck UConn. And you get UConn from a basketball standpoint. Stanford adds the robust academic profile of the top ACC schools, like Wake, UVA, Duke, et cetera. So, I mean, again, it makes zero geographic sense, but pretty much none of this stuff does. So, yeah. I mean, that would be my move. If I'm the ACC. Is like, hey, if some of these West Coast schools are going to go to the East Coast, like, why don't we just pick up Stanford?
Well, and then take your pick of don't. The advantage to that, now we're just in the spitballing portion of the show. Like, rather than, I just want to make that clear, like, we are not reporting anything. We are just, like, out here playing.
Joe's a very well-known Stanford insider, so.
We are just out here kind of throwing stuff against the wall. Let's have some fun, you know? Because if you're the ACC, don't just let the Mountain West have first mover advantage on those West Coast teams. And furthermore, from a football standpoint anyway, like you could do some work and say, okay, let's take the four West Coast schools and let's add San Diego State and let's add Boise and let's add Fresno State and let's add, you know, take the best teams in the Mountain West and put them out there with those West Coast teams. You've got the old airplane conference, basically. Shout out to Matt Brown and his college football history about the Metro, the airplane conference. So, I mean, that's a huge number of teams. But now you actually are talking about something that feels a little more sustainable.
Yeah.
And again, sitting on your hands, like we have countless examples of how in this college sports landscape, sitting on your hands is almost the worst thing that you can do. Like no one has, I feel like no one, and maybe there's an example I'm just missing. No conference, I think, has really regretted making these moves, really. Like,
yeah.
I think there's been maybe some like West Virginia.
The schools individually regret them, but the leagues, like, you're right. Like, yeah, that's
right.
Fine.
West Virginia probably like looks at the Big 12 and is like, eh. But again, what was their other option, right? So,
yeah.
But the conferences, there's not a lot of regret typically on these things. And so, you know, sit on your hands at your own peril.
Yeah, I think if you're the ACC, it's a great point, Joe. Like if you're the ACC, you're looking at the Big Ten and saying, hey, you guys you've just assumed a West Coast Olympic sport problem. Like this does not fit. Like you know you can pretend it fits, it doesn't fit. So can we come up with we'll help with the football side, can we come up with Olympic sport collaboration? I don't know, like some really smart people could get creative with this and say, hey, if we were to take football off the table and like we'll take football and that helps our football situation. I mean, they took Notre Dame for football for the pandemic season, and then let's coordinate an Olympics. I don't know, like that's where something fun maybe comes of all this.
Hey, maybe the Pac, maybe the Pac-4 and the Big Ten can have another alliance.
Oh gosh!
Remember when they were going to go after the SEC with the Big Ten Pac-12 alliance?
Hey, let's wrap with this. The only fun part of all this stuff has been the tweets. So Washington Baseball, which has got one of the best Twitter handles in our sport, they're always bringing the ruckus. They did the tweet, Joe, that I know you saw, basically saying, what is Menards? Like, I thought that was a great, you know, they basically said, hey, nice to meet you. My name is Washington. And what is this Menards thing? And then the one that the office video GIF that BYU played with Utah that said, oh, how the turntables. Oh, that is just, if you haven't gone to BYU's Twitter handle for athletics, you need to do that. That was gorgeous.
That's an underrated rivalry in football, man. That's a fun game. The Holy War.
The Holy War. Yeah. I also saw the Michael Scott GIF of used in a different context, how, you know, the Big Ten was kind of coming out and say, well, we don't want to be the ones to kill the Pac-12. And then of course they kind of were ultimately. And it was that Michael Scott quote of like, frankly, I want all of the credit and none of the blame. Like, and that's, it's, you know, kind of where they were. But
my favorite part of the whole saga was like, you know, Stuart Mandel and all these different athletic writers, you know, tweeting it at night, like, oh, it looks like the Pac-12 is done. At like 8 a.m., they tweet out, oh, the Pac-12 appears to be saved. And then like 2 hours later, Big Ten announces the addition of Oregon and Washington. Like, what? Like, what is going on here?
This is crazy. The whole time I'm looking at an app on my phone that says X, which I'm trying to figure that out at the same time. What are we even doing with our lives? What happened to the planet Earth? Boys, let's cap it right there. That was good. That was fun. That was good therapy. I don't know if we accomplished anything. I like the idea of peak events running a bunch of weekends for these leagues. Yeah. So that would be really fun.
Maybe, you know, we can get the SEC to add the carrots.
Oh, the carrots. I did tweet that the carrots are...
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
True or false? Walmart has eye care. True. Stop by Walmart to save and browse top designer frames right where you already shop. And they accept most insurance. Welcome to Easy Eye Care. Welcome to your Walmart.